following is an interview with Dorothy Haddon Williamson, a retired factory worker, retired school bus driver, and female farmer of Toombs County. This interview is being conducted by Jenny Abercrombie in Ms. Williamson's home, located at 3890 Old Normantown Road, Normantown, Georgia, on March the 20th, 1996.
My name is Dorothy Williamson, and I was born in on April the 30th, 1925. And we lived out in the country. And we moved from house to house. We were more or less sharecropped. I was small back in 25 and 30. When I started to remember things that would happen. Remember my mama, how she would do, how my daddy, he worked, and he sharecropped, and he drank. My daddy drank real bad, but he'd always make a crop. We always managed to live. I remember mama talking about, back then, it was Ku Klux. They had Ku Klux Klan, and it was very dangerous for a man to be out on the road at night, especially, and then them drinking, because they would catch them up and whip them. They would whip them real bad. And I remember my mama walking the floor and on the front porch just a-crying, not knowing where Papa was at. She was so upset. It was way in the night, so he finally come in, him and his buddy, in the wagon. They was off in a one-horse wagon. And so she was all right, but she was so upset that he was going to come in and be whipped or be bad and not get home. We sharecropped and moved from 1 year to the next. We raised hogs and cows. We had a good many hogs and cows. I had several brothers and sisters that was older than I, my baby sister and my baby brother, and then the brothers was older. So we, Jenny, this ain't going very well. We stayed right in Georgia. We stayed up there on the hoofy between the old road, what they call the 297 now, was an old dirt road from went from Vidalia to Swainsburg. And we lived up there on the hoofy all our lives. We farmed from one to another one
in that local
area we just farmed. As long as my daddy was able to farm, that's what we done. But then we just moved, you know. Well, most of the people that didn't own their own land, that's the way they do it. Done. They move, sharecrop with this man 1 year, or maybe they might be there for 5 or 6 years. And then they would get something they thought maybe was better, or they had to move for some reason. But we would move, and I remember Mama having a porch slammed full of beautiful flowers. She had to have them flowers, don't matter where we lived or how much we moved, she carried them flowers. And if we moved every load that went, she would carry several boxes of flowers. Wherever she could find a room to set that box of flowers, she would carry it. And when we get through moving the household goods and the outside, stuff outside, farm equipment, stuff like that, it was to go back and get a wagon load of flowers.
Wagon.
Yeah, well, that's what we had then, was mule and wagon, two-horse wagon. Two mules hooked to this wagon, and that's the way most people travel. First automobile I can remember was, I was probably 10 or 12 years old, the first automobile I ever saw. And we lived in Uncle Sweet's when I saw that, and Buck Corbin had bought it. He bought one of them little two-door with a one-seat car. It had one seat in it and the trunk that they let up. You could sit in the back, or either you could store your stuff back there, either one. That's the first thing I remember ever seeing. But that's who we farmed with. Most all my life that I can remember was with Uncle Sweet, which he was a distant related to Mama. He was a Phillips, and my mama was Phillips. I don't know how close kin they were, but we always called him Uncle. Well, more or less, most of the houses were pretty good. They weren't real good. The one that we lived in Oak Suites had it had three bedrooms and a big, long kitchen on the side of it. It was a great big kitchen. And it had two fireplaces, stacked chimney, and two fireplaces, and a bedroom on the back, which it had, I reckon, five bedrooms and the kitchen. It was a good big house, and it was in good shape. It was more or less, it wasn't a seal inside, but it had good siding around it. That's where my oldest sister had pleurisy, and she was operated on for that. We lived there. She took sick and was sick about a week. And they didn't know what was wrong with her, and he got the doctor out there. So he had to go in and lance that pleurisy, and it was in her side. And at the time they were lancing that pleurisy, we had a whole hound dog, and she had a fit and come in the house and went to the door to the bedroom that she was in, doing the operation. She went there to that door and had the awfulest kind of fit. And it's nothing to beat that. But I was real small. I remember very well how the dog done. So we moved back, moved over down here to, over there to Charlie Hall's, and we farmed there for several years. That was about the best life I had, sort of, and a child was there because my girlfriend lived there close, and we were right close to she had two first cousins, and they had an uncle that was about the same age as we were, and we would whip them up about every day or two. Me and her would whip them three or four. That Bernard remembers that too, yet he'll mention that and everybody every time I see him. Me and Reed used to whip him so bad. But we were there one day, and then me and her was playing, and this old man, Tommy Williamson, come to home, him and his wife. He was real old. And we were around there doing something, and he got to picking at us. And we got to pick him back, and he'd run us around the house. And what was so mean that we done, he run us around the house. And so we decided we would trip him, and we tied a wire from a post to the corner of the house. And when he come around the house after us, we jumped the end wire, and he tripped on it and lost his cud of tobacco. Oh, we laughed and we laughed and we laughed. But he didn't run us no more. He got hurt. He didn't run us anymore after that. And we thought, got thinking about that later on. And so I told Marguerite, I said, you know, that was very ugly for us to do that old man like that. Well, he kept picking at us, and he wouldn't leave us alone. but we would do, we'd just do anything here about for meanness, what we would back then. But we lived there for several years. Then we moved back to Uncle Sweet's, and we stayed there another year or so. And that's when my Dudley had so many. She had her EL. I hope her with him. I'd wait on him. Then my oldest sister, she lived at Oak Park, Sarah Lou, and I'd go down there and stay with her. She had two girls, and every time she'd have a baby, I'd have to go and help her, help wait on her. Stay with her. I wasn't about 10, 11 years old back at that time. So she's the one to learn me how to make up biscuit. She'd sit in the chair and tell me how to make the biscuits up. And then when I got them baked, they'd bust every kind of way off top, bust all to pieces. They would. we had doctors that the doctors would come out. Oh, doctor. There's old Dr. Lanier in Soapland, and then there's old Dr. Youngman's in Swainsburg. And they would come out in the mule and buggy. They had a mule and buggy. They went everywhere and doctored people, children and old people when they got sick. And they'd go most of the time when they went. What you got, if you were sick, you got a dose of Calomel, which is a medicine to take. But then you taken that in so many hours after you taken that, you had to take a working medicine to work it out of you, because if you didn't, that Calomel would celebrate you or something, some way or another, would affect you. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't good for you to take, but it was a good medicine. And after you taken that, it wasn't but about one or two grains of it was all you ever could take. And then you take working medicine after that. And if that didn't do you any good, then hit with something else. They come up with something else, doctor had to come by. But most of the times you just had an ordinary cold or just did your body need cleaning out, that's what you got. But back then they would make up a lot of old remedies and use theirself, because I didn't know that mama kept acidity, which a lot of young doctors don't hardly know what that is. And camphor, she'd keep camphor gum, and we would use that for rubbing medicine to rub on you. And the acidity, they'd take that for the colic. They'd give that to the babies when they'd have colic. And that way then it would knock it right up, colic. But they would cry that 3 months colic. And they'd cry for 3 months with it. But you could give them that when they go to crying. Make them go to crying somehow anyway, and you could give them that, and it would ease their stomach. But that's where it was coming from, where it's from their stomach. They'd hush crying a little while, and they'd be all right, maybe for 2 or 3 days. Sometimes it wouldn't be that long. You'd have to give them another dose, doctor. I remember I was about 9 years old, and Mama had hurt her hand some way or another, and he had got it sort of infected, and it got to hurting, and it kept on hurting, and he got a red streak, started running up it, and it had done got way up to here, and she was done getting uneasy about it. So she sent me, and I can't remember which other one it was, but we went down about a half a mile to a neighbor down there, because his wife, Buck Corbin's wife, was a nurse. But she had quit nursing. She was getting old, and she quit nursing. And she sent us down there and asked her what to do for him. I think she'd been soaking it in warm salt water. And she told us to tell her to get her some iodine and paint above where it was at, coming up. So that's what she done. She painted it with iodine, and probably 2 or 3 times, and it stopped it from running, spreading. It went back down, and the sore on her hand got better. But now, when they have something like that, it's something serious. Serious, real serious, which it is real serious. Because you got poison in your arm, or get poison, and it goes to running off, it'll go to your heart. That's about the first place it'll go, is to your heart. It'll kill you. But they had old remedies back then that would cure most anything to a certain extent. Didn't hear everything, but most of it did. I can remember my daddy talking about how things was when he was a child. back then they had that typhoid fever, and most of the time people died from it. Because I know there was a girl that lived there not far from us that had it. And she liked to not have over it, and all of her hair come out. What they have been treating, but I don't know what they treated her for. But I know Dr. Lanier from Soapland treated her. But my oldest brother, when he was a baby, he got sick. I don't know what he had. In fact, I don't think the doctors ever figured out what he had. But he had some kind of a high fever, something or another. And old Dr. Yeomans from Swainsburg, he would come every other day out there and to see you, and every day, or about every day, Papa said he put him down in a tub of ice water, and he'd sit in that ice water to cool his fever. For I don't know, several days that they had to do that to save him. But it did. He survived it, whatever it was with that. But the doctor was treating him for it, and with that ice water cooling that fever. And he rolled it. He was hard with people back years and years ago. They made these old movies of them and all. Some of it was harder than what they made of the movies that have been made of them. Some of it. Some people live harder than that. I never went to town till I was a great big thing. I didn't start school till I was 9 years old. Because we lived, where we lived, the buses didn't come, but just so close. They just had a certain route to run, and if you didn't live on that route, well, then you didn't go, or either you walked to meet the bus. We moved close enough that I could walk to meet the bus. That was over a mile then. Walked to meet the bus. We lived way back in there on the river, and we would walk out to the road to meet it. If it was raining in the evening when you got off the bus, you got wet going home, no matter how cold it was. And if it was raining of a morning, you didn't go to school. Well, it was about like it is now in a way, except the classrooms was full. And they didn't have but one teacher. And that one teacher, she taught everything. They played ball. They had activities, not as many as they have now, but what they done it in the hours they was at school. It wasn't after school, any of it, unless you live right there at the schoolhouse and didn't have to go home to do something like that. But for them that live way out in the country, you know, had to ride that bus, and they had to go home because there was no way home. I played ball when I was about 12 years old, and I played basketball. And when we have a game and it would be at night, well, I would stay in Oak Park, because we live 7 miles out from Oak Park. And I would stay in Oak Park. Sometimes I'd stay with my teacher, my basketball coach teacher, or either I'd stay with a friend that would live there in Oak Park. That way I would get to go to the games. Yeah, Oak Park, that's where I went to school at Oak Park. When I went to Gill Spring, I didn't play basketball there. I wasn't old enough to play. Then too, it was a country school. It was out in the country, and there was nobody that lived close to around there. Well, I did have one friend that lived there close, which I went and spent the night with her one night, but I just spent the night. She lived in about half a mile from the school. Millie was her name. I can almost see her now. You know, as she was when we were growing up. Most of my time I went to Oak school, play basketball. Read the grades they had, they'd have highs 25 and 30, and maybe sometime more than that to the grade. But they didn't have, they had the first grade and the second grade. That they didn't have two or three of them grades. They just had one of them is all they had. They had on up to the 11th grade. I went to the 8th grade. I was 70 years old then. Didn't go and finish. That's why I said I wished that I would have finished instead of getting married. I'd finished schooling, but back then you didn't think things like that. You didn't have that much encouragement like children has now, and be encouraged to go on and get a better education, even if they're married or not married, or if they even got a family. Think about all that finishing school that I really needed. But we moved here to Normandy when I got married. married Oak Park. I played basketball. I started playing basketball when I was in the fourth grade. And I had done played 4 years basketball when I got to the eighth grade. So I don't know if I could have played at another four, and that was my whole life with ball, playing basketball. Don't know if I could have played another 4 years or not, whether they would have let me or not. Because it was on record, even back then, you didn't have a 4 years in anything like that. See, I done had that because I started when I was in the fourth grade playing. I was old. I started when I was school at nine, so that way I was old and big for my size, and they let me play. The high school girls was more or less was proud for me to play. Even the coaches, the teachers wanted me to play. But we farmed. I remember my oldest brother, my daddy drank, and he left it up to my oldest brother last year to farm. He done the farming, and he make us pick cotton. I remember very well him making us pick cotton. he made his brother next to him pick cotton. He didn't want to pick, but he made him pick anyway. Anyway, we wouldn't know where Papa was at a lot of times like that. We'd be working and we wouldn't know where he was at. Because he was young, he was probably in his 40s, and like back a lot of times men back then, a lot of them, they would have a family, but they wouldn't stay home and help raise them. They would come in and out. You know, that's the way Bobby's daddy done all his life. Bobby said that he didn't know if he ever had done an honest day's work in his life. I didn't either. But my daddy was that way. I can remember being home most of the time, but I can remember that he wouldn't be there when I was making us pick cotton. But now fish, he loved to fish. It didn't matter how much the grass grew, when it come time, when the signs was right, he went fishing. I think about went Buddy a lot of times, because that's the way Buddy would do. He'd come in, went fishing. Nobody to go with him. He goes by himself, I reckon. He don't even want Papa to go with him. Oh, yeah. But I went fishing with my older brother. Not the oldest one, but with TJ. I went with him more than I did Papa. Papa was a lot like... Buddy is a lot like Papa. He'd rather go right by himself. That's the way Papa was. He'd rather go... If he's going fishing, he wanted to go right by himself. Now, TJ would let me go with him. I've been to the hook and we'd raid right up and down that run, right out in the middle of that run, him a fishing and me behind me. I had two brothers that was older than me. TJ's the one I would go fishing with the most. TJ's the one I would mind the most, because when I was about, I don't know how old I was bad to talk back to him. I was up one day talking back to him, and next thing I knowed, I had got up under the piano. I was, he had backhanded me, and I had landed up under the piano. I can remember that just so well. he was sitting in the chair, and he done that. I reckon he just hit me. He hit me. I don't know that he hit me that hard or what, but it felt just like. When I come to, I was up under the piano, but I don't think he knocked me out. It probably scared me so bad, but from then on, I was very careful not to get up and talk back to it too close. But he is the only one that would ever pay me for anything I do. He'd come in, he'd want me to shave him, and he would pay me. He would give me sometime a quarter. Sometimes he'd give me 50 cents. Yeah, to shave the beard off of him. he would work. Most of the work they done, which is a shame, but they would make moonshine. They would moonshine. That's what they drank most. Well, that's what they drank all the life was moonshine liquor that was made, somebody made or they made. I just don't bought stuff now. It runs you crazy if you drink it very often. Continuous drinking it. It make light moonshine, of course, but moonshine is nowhere about as bad as this, you know, whiskey they make now, this stuff. Because of what they make it out of, you don't really know exactly just what's in it. And it's like the food you buy now. Back then, what you eat then was fresh meat that had been killed and put in the smokehouse. Mm. It was cured by salt. That's all it had in it was salt. This now that you eat, if it's cured meat, you don't know if it's cured with salt or what it's cured with. You don't know. I remember my daddy, the last cow we had, I remember him killing her. She was a beautiful little heifer. He killed her and hung her in the smokehouse and smoked her. And that's the last thing we had, because back it was getting where people more was, which I was just a young one then, but people was worse about stealing them. And you couldn't hardly run them out. They had people that got where they were so awful, many of them. And if they got mixed in with somebody else's, a lot of times you would never see them. No, no, you had your own smokehouse. They would kill it out of the woods when it was in the woods walking. That's when they would, a lot of times they would get it. It wasn't that it was, well now they would steal it from the smokehouse also. There were a lot of people that would steal meat from a smokehouse. That's why people had such good yard dogs, and they had them in the yard. When you come up to the house, you didn't go in that yard till somebody told you to come in. It ain't like it is now. Come up and get out, and the dogs run up and love you, and you go on. They'll let you know somebody's coming, but that's about all it is. But back then, you did not get out or walk up. When you come up to the gate, you didn't come on in that yard. Some dogs was in there. They get you if you come in there without being told to come in. There was always several dogs, but most of ours was for hunting. They would keep dogs for hunting when I was a young one. We had some little mixed spice. TJ, he was a young boy back then, but he would go off in the woods and he would get drunk. And a lot of times he'd get drunk, and if he got drunk, he'd just lay down wherever he's at. And them dogs would lay down there, too. They didn't go off and leave him. And nobody didn't come up. Because they'd be different ones come in and tell him about, well, TJ's over down in the woods drunk. But we didn't go to him. We'd let you go to him, but they wouldn't. We had some, and we had one to go mad one time. That dog come up under the house. Oh, you could hear him running under that house, and he'd just bumping his head. He had everything he'd hit under there with his head, them rafters. Joyce, poor Joyce. Come out from under the house and went down side the road. And I can't remember if they killed him before the dog got away or not. But when they went mad like that, they just leave. They just keep it going because they didn't know where he was going. Come up on anything, whatever they come up on, they would bite it. And in about 7 to 9 days, that would go mad. Which is like, I see now, being like a mad dog now, is like the age is with the people now. Back then, we still have things that go mad, but not like they used to. It's very seldom that people would have something going mad. Dog would be mad and they'd have to kill it. And they'd have them and wouldn't want to get rid of them, and they'd shut them up. They'd think they were mad that somebody bit them, and they'd shut them up to keep from losing them. And they would do it in such a way that they'd just tear out. They'd be like a prisoner in there, and they would find a way to get out. And they did whatever they come up on, it didn't matter. They would attack it. It didn't matter at all. If it was anybody or if it was another animal, a mule or a horse or a cow, it didn't really matter who it was. different things. We lived in our streets. We went to the river every week or so that we would go to the river and have a fish fry. The family that we farmed with, they had some teenage boys and girls that was older than me. They were the age of my oldest brothers and sisters. They'd go down there and they'd catch fish. And the women would all come on and they would fry fish and stay down there all day at the river. And that was several times out of the year that they'd do that. And back then, they would on Easter, they would gather. They used to gather at home on Easter and have big Easter egg hunts. And after Easter egg hunts, we would go in and hunt violets in the woods. People burned the woods and the violets would come out and you could see them. Sometimes to go back, which a lot of times I get thinking about things of how it was when I was a child. I remember when my baby sister died, that we lived back on the Meadow Highway over there, back in there, and we had cotton and corn and peanuts and all that stuff, and my papa and my brother-in-law and my old brothers would chip boxes, and they'd come in every evening. I mean, papa, every evening he'd come in, he would have us a big piece of rosin to chew it like chewing gum. That's the only chewing gum we ever knew what was that rosin when I was a small coming up. But now some of it would chew just like this dentine chewing gum chews now. In fact, I don't know some of it I'd rather chew than the dentine. But he'd bring us in some every evening. And something else he'd come in with would be sweet gum bush. Come by the run up on a sweet gum tree somewhere in the woods of shipping boxes. And he would break him off a little limb and he'd chew the end of it off. And that's what he used, sort of like a toothpick in his mouth. And he would carry that about all day and clean his teeth with that sweet gum. And I guess it had a sweet taste to it. He had one of them very often when he'd come home out of the woods from shipping boxes. Shipping box. Well, these pine trees we have now, they would go there down low to the bottom, and they would cut a gash in it this way and this way. Then they take a tin cup and a little piece of tin plate, and they would run it up under there and tack it. And put that cup and put a nail up under there and hang that cup. All right, that cup would run, full of that tar would run down out of that tree and run into that cup. And every week they go there and they would chip that tree on each side every week, because it would run out so much out of that little place, and then they had to make a new one because it would heal over. And they'd have to make a new scar on that tree for it to run again. And about every 3 weeks, then they'd go there with them a bucket, and they'd go from tree to tree and get that tar out of that bucket, and out of that cup, and put it in their bucket. And they'd have these, what we call them 55-gallon drums. They had 55-gallon wood barrels, called barrels back then. And they would pour it in that till they'd get a barrel of tar. And back then, hit tar wouldn't be more than $5 or $10 for a barrel of that tar. And they take it, which they got a turpentine still out here in Vidalia right on, they take it there, or take it Swainsboro somewhere, and to the turpentine still and sell it. Yeah, they were working it on Hayes. Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, whatever you done, whatever we done, we had to share it with whoever owned the land. Extra money coming in. Yeah. farm in the same way. The whatever was made and then turned around and sold, we got half of it and they got half of it. I feel like sometimes, and Mama didn't have any education in the way of her books and stuff like that, but I think a lot of times she felt like that they were being cheated, because Papa wouldn't keep up with it. And when we got through with everything in the fall of the year, we would really have nothing left because they had run us all the year. And so that way, with Papa hunting, they always hunted. We lived off of wildlife, a lot of what we lived off of, like rabbit, squirrel, and fish, and wild hogs in the woods. And when I was real young, we had a lot of cows that we killed, and we killed hogs. We had hogs, too, that we killed that we wintered down off of, and that would do us way up into the summer, and we done got without meat. Well, like it is now, we got without meat. He'd go out there and kill a hog. And I can remember very well in the summertime that they would be in the hoofy and kill a wild hog, run up on one and kill it, and bring it home, and Mama would fry up the meat. She'd fry it. She'd stand in the kitchen and fry meat all day long and pack it in a lard can full of grease. And when we needed something meat, then she'd go there and take it out. It would keep it as long as it was in that grease. Cooked, it would keep. And go there and take it out and warm it up, and we'd have meat to eat. In sharecropping, if you, like I say, like she felt like a lot of times Papa wasn't getting what he ought to been getting because of what they would live off of what they would get each month to buy groceries from, with what he would kill and gather for his set for us to eat. And when he shipped boxes, they always come home with rabbit or squirrel, one or the other, in their lunchbox. They would kill it, dress it, pack it in that lunchbox, and bring it home. So that way, and what they had to kill one then was either a lighter knot or a slingshot. They never had a gun in the woods with them to shoot anything with. Now they could take a lighter knot and kill a rabbit just as easy as a lot of people who takes a gun to shoot them with now. And then with the dogs that they carried with them, if they dog jumped one, they would lay down and they would get it, probably would dress it, put it in the lunchbox and bring it home. It was after dinner. We really never went hungry. Hungry. Remember, always canned. We always canned a lot of canned stuff. Peas and tomato and stuff like that. Canned it in the spring of the year. We went for winter. But we didn't have a lot of other things like other youngins have, but back then, most of the time what people had was a home. They had owned the land, maybe, and a mule and wagon. Maybe some of them had several mules and wagons. They didn't. There wasn't automobiles like they are now. Stuff like that. I feel like sometimes them old days, I believe they people were closer in them old days than what they are now, because now they will talk, eat you up to your face and then get off and do your dirt to your back. Well, a lot of them is. But life goes on, and I guess it will, as I'm getting as old as I am. It's got to get worse. It can't get too much better. Do something that's really going to take place. It might get better, but I don't believe it will. Well, my first job, that was the year your mama was born. daddy farmed when I was at home. I never picked too much cotton because I wasn't no cotton picker, but I hope my daddy plow, I hope he can get wood, I hope he can build houses and remodel, barns, put tops on barns that need mending and just stuff like that. But I never hope mama. In fact, I can't hardly remember ever washing dishes when I was younger, but I was a younger coming up, or helping her cook, or anything like that. I didn't know a thing about cooking. The only cooking I ever done was when I went to my oldest sister and hope her. But mama always done all of that. Now I'd help her with the garden, help out there in the field, but as far as the house, I didn't do no housework. I sewed. Started sewing. I made my first dress when I was 14 years old. In fact, the dress I made, one of the dresses I made, I got married in it. I was 17. No, I didn't have no job. There wasn't no jobs unless you lived in town or something like that, out in the country. There wasn't no jobs for people to go to town and get jobs like they do now. Like I say, there weren't but very few that had automobiles to ride to go back to the town. Now there were some that had were teachers. Now my Uncle Sweet's daughter, in fact he had two daughters and both of them made teachers. And they lived right there close to us, but we didn't ride back into the school with her. We rode the bus. They had a way to go back into school because they had went off and had made school teachers. But back then, you didn't have to have but 2 years of college to teach school. And some of them, I don't really think, had that to teach school. But as the years grew, they had to get more education to teach. Because I knew that one of the teachers that taught me when I was, I must have been in about the fourth grade, she, for the most part, Juanita Strange. She finished school while I was going to school there. When I first began to go to school, she finished school and went off. And I don't know whether she was gone 2 years or not, but she come back and went to teaching school right there. And she was one of my favorite teachers at school because at that time I played basketball. And if they were going on a trip, go play a game during the day, they'd leave after dinner and get back time to catch the bus home. And it was a nickel to ride the bus, which I didn't play, but she would give me that nickel to ride that bus to go to that game that evening. She would pay my way up there if I went to school and didn't have that no money to go with, but she made sure that I would have money to go on that trip with. So then I would give it back to her. Mama, a lot of times when I asked for it, she would give it to me. But a lot of times, like I say, TJ, he would pay me to shave him, and that was about every weekend, so I would get a hold of at least a dime or a quarter, and I could give it back to her. She never said a word about it, about me owing her any money. Even a nickel back then meant a lot to people. We would work in the fields and pick cotton, hoe cotton. We were hoeing back. Remember we stayed there at Buck Corbin's and it was farming for Miss Corbin. We had those shoots right out there off from the house. There weren't so awful many of them, and I don't know what Papa always wanted them for, but he always had hogs, and the fence, you could turn your hogs in the field when the corn was gathered out of the field, you could turn the hogs in there. And so he wanted them troopers so they would be something for them to eat. in the winter. And then her was out there hoeing on them things, and for some reason or another, when she says to me, they called me Neatney back then when I was a young one. That was my nickname, Neatney. She says, when I get this hoe, Neatney, says this will be my last hoeing. I'm not hoeing no more in the fields. She was right. That was her last hoeing. There was no more hoeing for when we farmed. It was either a hired hoe or they wouldn't get hoed because she was through hoeing. But now them shoopers was good. You could pull them up like a peanut and wash them off and eat it, and it would have a good taste to it. I'd love to get a hold of some of them now, but I have no idea where. You can see them in iced potatoes once in a while, but I don't know where they grow them at. But it's a good hog feed. People grow for the hogs. But we pull fodder. That's something else we had to do in the fall of the year when it'd be so hot. As soon as that fodder was going to turn in brown and the corn would be matured, it was going to pull in that fodder. It's the blades off the corn. And you go there and you would strip that all the way down. And when you got both hands full, you put them together and you twist the top of it and you would hang it over the ear of corn. And it would hang there for two or three days and get dry like hay. All right. When it got dry, good and dry, go there and feel up in the middle, and if it was dry in the middle and all, then you go back and you go along and you pull it off of there and put it up under your arm till you got a good armful, and then you take your several strands of it and twist it around it and roll it and tie it. You didn't tie it, you rolled it and then you stuck it in under it, but it would stay. You didn't tie it like in a knot, anything like that. You just rolled it up and then twisted it up and then stuck it back in up under the roll around there, and then they would pile it. And then they take the wagon and go back in there, and they would stack it on that wagon, and they would carry it to the house. They would take them a big long pole and stick it in, put it in the ground with the hole diggers, or anyway, it would be in the ground, and it would be sticking up probably 8 or 10 foot high. Some of them might be higher than that. And they would take and nail them two sticks crossed them at the bottom. They would cross it, nail it to them post, and then they start stacking that fodder around it. And you would walk it, and you would stack it, and you would walk it, and you would stack it all the way to the top. When you got it to the top, then you take a bundle of it, and you stuck it down on it, and you bend it over like that. And when it rained, then the water would run off of it. It wouldn't run in it. It would run off of it. Down the sides. A lot of people have two or three stacks of that at their house, and that's what they fed the cows and the horses with. That's, instead of having hay, they would have fodder back then. You were very well toting it. You go out there and you go along there and you catch it by the end of the blades where it wouldn't be so rough. And you catch and hold all you could hold, get just so many of each one out of each one, and catch a bunch of them, and then you put it on your shoulder, throw it on your shoulder, and tow it to the wagon. And there would be one on the wagon and stack it in, and one downside the wagon throwing it up, and they would stack it on that wagon to carry it to the house. It would be a lot of fun, and it wasn't really that hard. It wasn't that hard work. It was just getting it done. Different things like that. We pick velvet beans in the wintertime to feed the cows and for seed. That's not in there. I got the plant. I can't get that out of my face plant. I reckon so, Jenny. It's something I just left to do. I don't know why. Like I say, I worked in the factories at Debbie. I was 6 months old when I started. We moved here and I started working in the factory, which I already had Helen and Elaine and Buddy. I already had three, and then Debbie come along and made four, and I had four. And so I started to work in the factory. That's when the world changed in Georgia. was when the factory started coming in here. We had an old car, and I was me and Annie, my sister-in-law, we would go to work together. So I worked off and on ever since in the factory until I started driving the school bus. But I like to do that. Most anything I've done, I like to do it. I don't know what it is. But farming, I always come back to farming. I always farm. And all doing all of that, I farm right on. But that is just help. Which I think, I get to looking back on it, and I believe I've done more of it than he done. I honestly do. Because I remember very well riding the tractor all day long and holding Larry in my arms and Heron and him in my arms asleep, and that is awful fishing. I think about, you know, some of the things I've done was very stupid of me. I don't know why. But I did. I would do most anything like that. I went to work at the shirt factory first, and I worked 2 weeks there. And it was to stand up, and I realized that ironing was never my favorite thing because it was like cooking. Because I never helped Mama cook when I was growing up. And when I got married then, Sunday was the only meal I hardly ever cooked was Sunday. Miss Weeks would take the young'uns and go to church, and I would stay home and cook dinner. So that was my biggest cooking I ever done. And then Daddy's went off to the Merchant Marines, and I went to worked at the factory. I went there, then I learned, which I always knew how to sew. So make more or less most of what I needed to wear and the youngest needed to wear. At that time, then I made most of what they wore, and I made a lot of Daddy's shirts. I was telling Elaine this morning, we were looking through the pictures there, and I was looking at one of the dresses that I had made for. It was out of a crepe of some kind that would not wear out. You couldn't wear it out. You wore it till you got tired of it, and you throwed it away, but to wear it out, you couldn't wear it out. And it was thin, you could see through it. And I made him 2 dress shirts. One was green and one was a blue, and he wore them and he wore them. He got tired of wearing them, I guess. And I made all the buddies and little Larry shirts that they wore to school. I made every one piece they wore. Well, when I was a child, we didn't have birthday dinners like they have now, but every 4th of July, when he'd come around, there was a big dinner at home. Every 4th of July, we had a big dinner. There was 1 or 2 hogs barbecued. They just, on my mama's people, more or less it was my mama's people. But Papa always done what was to be done. He was always right willing to do. And then all the neighbors, too, we had a family meals is that was close, and we were very close in the years that we lived there close together. We was always a real close family, to not be related anyway. They're just a good friends to us. But we would always have that 4th of July dinner. They'd have a big old keg of lemonade and a big keg of tea to drink. And just food, just awful in the world, that food. And it seemed like it was, I believe, the last thing I can remember us having was that we lived in Uncle Sweet's. And there's a big old oak tree in the backyard, and they had built a swing in it. And it was high, it was a high swing. And my oldest sister had a friend that lived with the Mills, which she was, I believe, a sister to one of them. I don't know just which one. And they were real close. And they were there that day, and they were all out there. I mean, they were just swinging, and she was swinging in that swing. And I can remember very well seeing how high she was going. And when she went out and come back, when she got right even with the ground, that thing broke and she hit the ground. And it would have killed her. I mean, it would have totally killed her if she'd have been up there, because it would have sent her probably 50 or 60 foot out there if it would have broken when she went up in the air with it. That was the scariest thing the bunch had ever been. And you know, I can't remember if we ever had another one after that or not. Probably so, but that's the one I remember the most on account of being the circus. I must not have been more than 7 or 8, because I don't remember if it was that same year or a year before too then, that we had awful hard winters back then. And my papa and mama, I remember, went for us the baby. And Bubs was, I don't know, she probably was 3 or 4 years old. I must have been about 5 or something like that. But they made us shoes out of old cloth, moccasins, I reckon you call them now, but we just call them old shoes, out of old overalls that would wore out for us to wear so our feet wouldn't get so cold that winter. And we lived in that same old place, there on Sweets, when that all that went on. But I can't, I can't remember just how old I was during all that time, because we didn't keep up with ages very much back then. I didn't keep up with the ages till I got, I reckon, me about plumb grown before I ever started trying to keep up with ages. But we knew each year, Mama always broke down when we were born. But we didn't ever have no birthday party, and we didn't ever have nothing like that to remind us, you know, that it was our birthday and what day our birthday was on. Some of them married for love, and some of them married because they didn't. I don't think there was, you know, anybody else close enough around. They just was a certain amount of people that lived together, because back then, a lot of then and older than that, way back older than that, that I know, that there was a lot of men and women that married. The men would be old, and maybe they would already have a wife and a child, and she would die, and they would be married a young girl that some of them wouldn't be hardly more than 13 or 14 years old, and they would be, probably some of them would be 25 and 30 years old. Oh, but it got better as I come up, because people got where they didn't have to walk as far. They could more or less had a mule and wagon, and they could, you know, they could ride, and they could meet people, and then the cars begin to come in and all that. So, but they still, a lot of them would marry just because that they would meet, and they would sort of correspond together, you know, in that way, and they would get married, and as they lived together, they were both a pretty good person. Well, their love would sort of grow. And they wouldn't, a lot of times there wouldn't be nobody to come in to interfere with that, to change that, because a lot of times they were so scared to try to change that anyway, because of what would be done to them. But now that, you know, somebody comes in and takes your wife, it's all right. You take somebody else's husband, that's all right. That was coming, you know, from the other side of the county and things like that. So he kept making a difference. Because, you know, a lot of times back years ago, they would come from way off in a mule and buggy on a wagon train and come into this little settlement where people were living, and then they would meet and they would get married. And like that. You never heard much of a older woman marrying a younger man. It was always more or less an older man marrying a younger girl. But he spoke way too much. They wasn't, the blacks wasn't a clan back then, it was the
white. No, that's what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they know back then it didn't matter. It didn't matter if it was white or black, whichever one it was. They got to do in ways that they wasn't what to do, and it got out where they were, and they take care of it. Well, I don't know if they didn't do women the same way, but women didn't do like they do now. I mean, really, they some did, but not very many. Very many didn't do like they do now. No, we're about like they do now. There were very few. I didn't really remember hearing them talk about that, women being whipped by and things like that, but I can still remember my mama crying and kind of Papa being off a drinking and afraid that he'd come home if he even come home. A lot of times they take him off and just tell him. Well, it was supposed to be in the upstanding men in the community is what it's supposed to be in. Now, some of them weren't that upstanding. But I know that they was a someone that, that was in. I kind of could it just be a man that would want, you would just do things because they could do it. Do it because I know this neighbor of ours, I don't know what in the world happened, but he had done something. And they come some bad to his house and called him out, and he got up out of bed. He didn't have no children. And I don't know. I never did. Which I can't remember, hearing them saying what they thought it was. But they didn't talk much about children like they do now. They didn't tell things that was going on. But a lot of this has been stuff that I heard after I got up good size that Mama would tell or Papa would tell. This man, he didn't have no children, him and his wife. And they went there one night in the night and called him out, and he didn't think about who it might have been. But he went out and got in the car, and they drove off of him, and they carried him off down there about 3 miles above it. And he had cold, and him in his underwear. And they left him down there. And he could get back the best he could get back. To this day, I don't know what it was about, unless it was about moonshine or something like that. Some kind of moonshine steel or something. And I don't even know who the other people were. Many more of it comes out of him like that. But they would do something about me like that. They just go and they get up and go out and see what they want, and they just load them up. Well, Lordy mercy, the time the sheriff got out then to where you were at, he wouldn't know what he was doing. A lot of times when I wouldn't come out that far. Well, it wasn't county law like they are now. As much, nowhere about as much. In fact, I don't know if I can ever remember hearing them say anything about, which I know they had it, had law, but from to come out in the country and see about anything I can ever remember coming out in the country. Well, I said that's why they had to two foot stand in the country. That way, then, they take care of what need to take care of more or less. But back then, when your mother or daddy said something about some things, they didn't say it in front of their youngest, but their youngest here, they know nothing about it. They told it years later, years or something like that. It wasn't told right then. that sometimes now. You don't really think about things then, because the way it was with us, when we got, when the family got together, the children, if they didn't run them out of the house, which most times they didn't have to be run out, they went on off and played. But I know when I was a child and go up on the hoopie, up there where my grandmother lived and my aunts and uncles and cousins, when I got up there, they didn't know where we was at half the time. We would be in the woods or down in the head of the branch up a tree, or we were somewhere else. And when we got, they got dinner ready, they would come out and holler, find where we were at. And they didn't run out and find out where you at, what you doing every few minutes, hollering don't get hurt and stuff like that. They told you that to start with, and you listen. Man, it's not like that. You've got to stay right in the house and hear everything that's being said, and they talk everything that they can talk right in front of them, but it wasn't like that. And we were growing up. We used to go up there on the hill. And grandma got real old, they'd have a birthday dinner for her, having a birthday dinner, it would be a barbecue. We'd go up there. Whenever it would be at night or whatever, they'd be up just about, they'd be more there than what we used to deal with at our barbecue. The house would be full, the road would be full, and it would just be a whole, just an outrageous bunch of people around there. And most of them would be family. They would enjoy life so much. They used to have a lot of dances at home. They knew very well, Christmas time, they would have dances. They would take one room and move out all the beds out of it to dance in. They'd get in there, make music makers, and they'd make music near about all night long. They'd put the young ones in the back bedroom, put them to bed. Sometimes you could sleep, sometimes you couldn't. But, you know, a young'un, when they get so sleepy, they're going to go to bed. They're going to go to sleep. So that way it would be, we'd all be back in the bed back there somewhere or another. There'd probably be two beds for the rooms. So we'd be in the bedroom asleep. We didn't stay in there with the old ones where the party was going on. They didn't let us stay in there at all. You went to your bedroom and you went to sleep at night when they'd have parties. Where they would have one every weekend. They would have some ones at somebody's house around there. Number three. Well, I remember the first time that I think I was about 10 years old. The first time that I stayed up in the park, but that go to the party. When I was 12 years old, I went through my first set. They danced. They didn't, they square danced. They didn't get out there and jump up and down and holler and kick and do like they do now. The only two dances they knew was square dance, and they had two-step and round dance, and that was just about all the kind of dances was done, or Charleston, and which Charleston was something you know about yourself. Well, they said square dance, and it was one dance right behind the other. The park till it was over with. I was 12 years old. I remember very well going through my first set. But Corbin carried me through my first set, square dance. After that, I always went to dance, and we went. They was one. They had one summer every weekend. Somebody would have a dance at their house. Live up there going on that 297 for the Meadow Highway across. That's where we live back in there most all my life. We live right in there. That old house is sitting right there where the Meadow Highway and 297 cross. That old house on the left sitting there. There nobody didn't live in it. And that's what we go there and have square dances. That's where we go there and have square dances. with two rooms. You danced with both rooms. and he got the older, was out there. Was there one night a dancing, and the seal, center seal broke. So they hadn't been long paved that highway, that Metter Highway. So they just moved everything out. They moved everything out there beside the highway and get the dance. And at that time, this 297 wasn't paved. It was still the dirt road. So they moved everything out there beside the highway, and we danced on the highway till way on into night. That was about, you know, that was one of the main things. And they'd have peanut ballings, just nothing but peanut ballings. And then they would have, in the spring, early spring of the year, they would have peanut shellings. They would have a big peanut shelling and syrup pudding, candy making time. People would buy a sack, they'd pack peanuts, and they'd buy a sack or two of peanuts. Everybody come in and they shell peanuts. They make syrup candy and put peanuts in it and pull it, or either they're full of syrup candy to eat. That's what they do, but everybody got their peanut shell that had peanuts. They'd have that peanut shell. People would come in, they'd be upon the house full sitting around in there shelling peanuts and telling all kind of old tales and jokes and laughing and carrying on. But we didn't have no kind of music like the radio or anything back then. We didn't have it. And nobody didn't come along but play a guitar or a fiddle or a banjo or something like that. And they played, they didn't sing with it. They just played. But yeah, I remember the first radio that we had. Well, the first radio I remember was that Buck Corbin and them bought it, and we went down there to listen to it. Must have been about 8 or 9 years old. Because I was growing. I must have been 10 or 15. Must have been around 14 or 15 years old when we got our first one, because it was battery run. We got a little battery. In fact, that's it sitting back there. That's the radio. And then Mama, when we got that one up there, it run off a little battery. Then when we moved here to Normantown, because I was 16 then, they bought another one. We did run off of a battery too. You had to have that battery to like a car for that radio to play. It was a little square one. It wasn't like that one. It wasn't like that one. My mama kept that one, but she kept it right on up until she died, and that's when I got it. It's an antique piece. Good antique piece. But that's the first one. Then the TVs started coming out. Started having them. I was getting pretty old. They said, first time I saw myself. Well, I don't really remember the Great Depression. All I can remember was what my papa back in the Hoover days. I don't take no more what year Hoover was president. But I can hear it from them. I think that's the year, I believe back then is when they were making major tune for time stop there. But I'm not too sure. Must have been around 1930, and I don't know just when Hoover was president. I can remember Papa talking about on years after that, about it, how hard it was when Hoover was president. When you're a child, you don't really look at things and like that. You might remember some of it if somebody mentions it or tells you about it or something like that, but it's very seldom things that you will remember unless you're in it, but you don't know that you're in it. It's a child. They don't correspond to the stuff that's that is hard, and you don't know if it's hard or not, not because you don't know where you, how your bread's being put on the table, or anything like that. But I know one thing that in the winter, how they would do, they would grind meal in the winter. And we'd have two big old barrels of meal, and in the winter, that's when they filled it up. Or in the fall of the year, they would, when they gathered the wheat, they would tear it and have it ground, and they would put it in barrels. For some reason, the barrels would keep it better than, they didn't have sacks, one or the other, I don't know which wheat. But we had two that sat in the kitchen that was about this high, and it always had a lid on it. You did not go there and bother that at all. And you did not play in the flour, you didn't play in the meal. Now he wouldn't do for it to be sitting in the house with the youngest and that. Now he would be all over the house. But we had an uncle up there that he grew all of that kind of stuff. Flour, meal, he grew our meal, but I can't never remember us growing wheat for flour. And I can remember Papa growing rice. To have rice. I can remember him growing that, or that he would grow in the wet places. He'd get down around the branch where it was wet and plant it. He didn't have to plant it awful much. And he would do us a long time. One of the good ones, the Hilton's up there, he would carry it. Oh, he'd have it stacked up in sacks where he'd carry it and have it ground into flour. And then he'd have that wheat shorts, they called it. He'd always get some of that wheat shorts to make flapjacks out of. A pancake. And with the pus of it off the wheat is what it was. It would be brown, light brown, and look very well. And have syrup. Not so often many messes that winter, but we'd have some that winter in syrup. She always had a raised, but we've always raised a lot of chickens. We have chicken and dumplings nearly every Sunday. Having chicken and dumplings. And it wouldn't be just a small amount. It'd be a big pot full. Because when she cooked Sunday dinner, she didn't know how many was going to be at the table. And a lot of times, we had a big old table twice as long as this one here. And it would be set in 4 or 5. I don't know how in the world, Mama. I think about how in the world did she survive to cook all that much every Sunday? And she never knew who was coming, who was going to be there. But they just start coming in. And with that dinner time, they just start coming in. And they'd be there all evening. And I can't never remember her complaining about having to cook and think for that many times. Didn't go to church back then. Because the way to get there, you want to be careful to go to church. He said, I got over it. He started going to church when he was there. That little shady church up on 296. I think he did either. We started going there. But one year we live right there close, and I don't know how some of that family of colored people that moved in there, but they had moved up there in that little old house. And for some reason, I think, well, there must have been a lot around that I didn't really know about, because they had preaching out there at that house. And Mama took us, all of us young'uns, and we went up and listened to the singing and to the preacher. We stayed outside, but we didn't go in. But we went up there and stood outside and listened to their singing and to the preacher. We've done that about twice. They've had that weekend there. And we went up there twice to listen to it. Mama liked her church. I don't know what she did. But she was raised to go to church when she was a girl. She liked to go. When we went so far to walk, we just don't go places you would like to go. When we moved to Charlie Hall's, we would go down there to Mount Katie to that church. year that we were needed there, he had bought him a new pickup truck. He killed hogs. He bought hogs and goats and peddled. He was a peddler, I call him. And he peddled that meat out. And he bought him a truck. And we take that truck every Sunday, and we go to church. We charge a nickel. But it would be loaded down, going to church. And they got to have his sayings. Homecoming, that's just sayings. And they have one at a church somewhere every Sunday. And I think we went to every one of them that Sunday. Every, I remember at the churches that we went to, and I was 12 and 13 or 14, probably about 2 or 3 years before we moved down here. I would go to church and stay all day, and that's when I bought a songbook, like a Stamp Baxter's Quartet songbook, a recorder. I should still have it in the belly now. It is old, but it has got some free songs in it. I'd love to hear them sing. That church, the churches would be just full. Big dinner, they'd have dinner on the ground. But hardly ever, the preacher didn't hardly ever have just say a regular sermon. It would just be singing and talking, and having a big lunch together and all that. Then after that, I got married. That was the end of life. That's when I died, but I'm thankful to the Lord for my young ones. I wouldn't give one of them for nothing on earth. People do get mad at them sometimes. I don't get mad at them very often. So we just don't get mad at them then. We don't do nothing for me to get mad at them. I put it that way. So I hope you can get some sense out of it, because Jenny, I swear.